Friends, Chris Sauter, lead pastor at Neighborhood Church. We work hard at creating content every week that is life-giving and inspiring for people to live a full life. So we're inviting people who find this stream to be life-giving and encouraging to consider becoming a sustaining member at Neighborhood Church. That could be a one-time gift or to subscribe monthly. And you can do that at neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Thank you, friends, and enjoy the message. All right. Where are my notes? Right here. That was really good. Interesting of that we've just been doing church so differently that there's still times where I'm like, what's the right word? That I'm surprised at how I can experience the divine in such a personal, life-giving way through music. Like sometimes it surprises me. And so I really I miss worshiping with all of you, like the singing part, I really do. And like that's the thing, I've never been like, that's not been my primary way where I've really connected with the divine is through musical worship, but that was a banger. That was really good. Every year I go away for a couple days and I pray, I read some books, and I do a lot of walking and talking to myself. I do that a lot. Because I'm a processor, like verbal processor, and if no one's there to talk with me, I just talk with myself. I'm a big fan of myself, so. I've learned that it helps me. Like, just to live in my head doesn't help. To say it out loud, like, I can experience it, I can hear it, I can feel the weight of it. And I do that to come up with a theme for the year. One of our values at Neighborhood is purpose, that we want to do things on purpose and with purpose. We just don't want to just, like, whatever we feel we're doing. And so I come up with a theme so that all of our messages can kind of fit under one big umbrella. And we have done this every year. In 2020, we did one and I came up with the whole year. And after about 6 weeks, when we started having the pandemic, we threw it out and had to make some changes. But this year, I went away a couple weeks ago and through talking to myself, walking around the lake, I came up with this. And here's our theme. It goes something like this. Every single week, almost every single week, I have a conversation over the phone or Zoom with someone asks these questions or these statements. Chris, I don't know if I can really do this anymore. The things that I called holy, the things I called sacred, the things I was certain in, the things that I told myself and my kids and other people that are true, I don't know if I can continue to say it anymore. And when they say that, it's usually met with some sort of fear and grief, which we'll talk about a little bit. And I love having these conversations because, I mean, I've been there as well. You feel utterly alone. You feel like you're taking crazy pills. You feel like, am I the only one to ever ask these questions? And on a whole range of things. And so when I can tell them that you're not alone and you're in excellent company, that for thousands of years, those questions that you've been rumbling, those questions that have been just going through your head that have woken you up in the middle of the night, have brought maybe some some shame or some fear. People have been asking those same questions since the beginning of spirituality, right? This is that transformation. I call it an evolution of faith. That has been happening. It's one of the healthiest, one of the most Jesus-looking things that we can do, right? I would say it's not just in the Bible, it is the Bible itself is telling this evolving faith story that leads to this incredibly good and beautiful life. So why is it then? Like rarely, and I say rarely because I can't remember, but maybe someone has called me up and said, Chris, guess what? I don't know if I can believe that if there's a loving God that he would or they would send someone to conscious torment for all of eternity. Woo, can you believe that? Right? Like, it's not met with joy, right? It's usually met with a deep sense of grief and fear. Like, I had just a couple weeks ago, I was talking to someone and they're like, hey, hold on. And they went and they, like, you could tell they were just listening and they shut the door. And they're like, I don't want my kids to hear this. And I'm like, what are we gonna talk about? The kids can't hear. Like, and what we talked about was of like, what is the meaning of salvation, right? Of what was handed down to this person. They're like, I don't know if I can really get behind it anymore. Like, why is that met with fear? Why is that met with, you gotta keep it quiet, right? Here's why. We have a deep sense of belonging. We all want to belong. We truly just want to be a part of something that's life-giving. It's something that brings us joy or brings us, like, purpose. And when you have a belonging that's tied to an agreement, which is not always bad, right? If you're going to join car club, then the agreement is, hey, I'm kind of a fan of cars, right? There's, like, something in the center of your community, of your family system, your friends, your workplace, and a church or a spiritual community. Something holds that gravity. Right? Something's the center of that gravity. And when you begin to possibly question that agreement, right? Like, what if I don't really like cars? Well, you might lose a sense of that belonging. And losing that belonging can be devastating, right? It's like, for me, there was a while back, and I was still a pastor, and it doesn't matter if I was a pastor or not, but part of my faith, right, is also tied to my profession, how I provide for my kids, right? They're kind of interlinked, being a pastor. But I started having some questions on things that I said, things I preached on. Like, here's one of them. I got on stage multiple times in front of thousands of people and said this, God's best is between a man and a woman in a lifetime legal commitment. Right? I said that. You can Google it. I have not because I don't want to hear it again, right? But at that time in my life, I believed it. And as a 3 on the Enneagram, there's things that I have said previously that maybe I didn't really believe, but I knew that would get me somewhere, right? It's what people needed to hear. That was not one of them. I really believed it at the time. And it was soon after I gave that message, I started thinking through even like the bigger picture of the word God's best is for. Even that in a philosophical idea, it already has this, sets the stage that there's people who, there's a God who willingly gives its best to some people. But there's other people you get less of God. So already there's varying levels of God that some people get the best. And what's it based on? That they're heterosexual and that they're married. And suddenly that's the door to get the best of God, while other people, at no fault of their own, right? I have a friend, I laugh at it now, but they said, if I could have chosen to be gay, in junior high I would have chosen not to be gay, because I would like to have friends and my parents like me. It's so tragic and devastating, right? But I think of having that conversation and they laughed about it, right? It's like they didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, you know what? I hope someday that I get kicked out of my faith community that I've been a part of since youth group. Wow, that'd be really good, right? You don't choose that. So then God's best is not for them. God's best then is conditional, right? I started like just thinking through that. I'm like, I don't know if I can get behind. And when I started reading queer people's experiences with the divine, I started listening to people's stories and hearing them and how much they loved Jesus and the things that they were doing was so Christ-like. It's like, well, it sure looks like God's best is in you. And so I started reading other authors and that there is a whole bunch of people and other movements and communities that love Jesus, that love the authority of Scripture, that hold on to sacred orthodox practices, that still say, yes, we all belong, and the best of God is already in you. It's already in you. There's not a God of varying levels, it's there. So I'm like having these questions, and I talked about them with Nikki, I talked about it with my friend Anna and Nick, but with everyone else, I felt like I couldn't talk about it. It felt too risky, it felt too scary, and I was experiencing some like excitement of like, well, I read this, and I just love the process with people. So on this walk in Gooseberry Falls, which is a state park in northern Minnesota, with one of my friends, and we've been friends for over 2 decades. So one of my best friends, we've gone through everything that makes really good friends. We went through trauma, death, like both births, right? Like love, laughter, me beating him at golf all the time, really normal things. And I'm on this walk, and he was standing right, he was walking in front of me, and I'm like, hey, where are you at with LGBTQ and inclusion and spirituality and Romans chapter 1? And it was like he was waiting for me to ask. He didn't like stop and turn and look, he just went, oh yeah, yeah, I've been there for years. And in that moment, I felt multiple things, very intense. First one was, I am not crazy. I'm not some spiritual deviant. I'm not some wacko who just made up and like ripped out pages of the Bible, like Romans 1, we don't need that anymore, right? And that's kind of how I felt, like maybe I'm some anomaly. Maybe I am off the path of righteousness, and I am just making this up as I go along. To feel like I belong, or I'm accepted, or I am normal, right? That is, and again, white, straight man, right? Imagine what queer people feel, people of color, right? Non-abled people, like, I just felt so good. And at the same time of that, like, I'm not alone, at the same time, I felt this, why don't we talk about this? Why have we never discussed this? Have you been there for years? And so I'm like, why have you never shared this? And it's like he was waiting again. He goes, because I see what happens to people in church when they do. It was like, that sense of fear that I had was real. Because I could say they're my friends, right? And their story's very public. I saw what happened to Ryan Bowers when he started asking these questions. I saw how people said his name 1 week before with like joy and camaraderie, and then the next week as he's some horrible person. I heard what people said about another pastor named Ken Wilson, who wrote a book, A Letter to My Congregation. I saw the pain that he had to go through, people he called lifelong friends. Like, I know that to be true. I felt it. And so then we started talking like about other things and other ideas about spirituality and God and philosophy, and it was so incredibly life-giving. So why do we attach fear, right? Why do we feel scared? What if we could like normalize that conversation? And again, the fear is legit. There's something in our brains of where, and I just so you guys know, I am not a doctor. I know surprisingly, I am very intelligent. I'm like way up here intellectually, but all this, I listened to a couple podcasts on this because it fascinates me. So if I'm wrong, then you have to blame the doctors, not me. So in the podcast, they're talking about confirmation bias and how we, when we find something we can agree on, something that brings us pleasure, something that brings us life, whatever you want, whatever it is, you can attach belonging to that. You can attach, this is where I can find life. And when it comes to church, including like our church is not exempt, right? You can find community, you can find friends, you can find, and like our teenage years, Nikki and I, because we met when we were 13, our youth group experience in our 20s and the church that we are part of, we found language, we found belonging, acceptance, friends, lifelong friends, community, support. And that is like, that feels good. When you find a really strong sense of community, we would be at church like 3 nights a week, maybe 4 nights a week, and in small groups and all that stuff because it felt really good. So when you can like find the belonging, your brain can just have like these well-worn paths of, I know what it looks like to find joy and acceptance, and this is what we agree upon, this is what we call holy, and this is what we don't. This is who's in, and this is who's out. And when something is presented that might not confirm your bias, that actually might go against what your agreement is, the part of your brain where the pleasure is goes down, and the part of your brain where the fight or flight response is kicks up. It's there because our brains don't like complex things, right? We want to be like, Bible is good, chicken is good, Wisconsin is, badgers are bad, right? Like we want to find like just easy, simple things. This is why conspiracy theories can catch on so quickly, right? So like, why did 9/11 happen? And we can like to go through all that what happened with the FBI and the CIA and the communication and the things that we've done to the Middle East as a country, perpetuating all the, I should not get into that, right? There's, it's so complex and years, if not decades, that say like, oh, the government just wanted to bring down the building, right? We'd be like, oh, okay, that sounds good, right? We can, anything that might contradict us, that fight or flight. Here's a practical example. Because when I listen to this podcast, it's the first thing I thought of. I have a friend who's a conservative. When I use the word conservative, I don't use the word conservative as they are less than or lower and I'm some woke progressive liberal. I don't believe that at all. Actually, we have an advisory board at Neighborhood and we've been talking about how do we engage more conservative people, right? Because like when we say everyone belongs and everyone's included, that really means everyone. We have several people in our church who politically are more conservative, and I love having those questions and those conversations. So with my friend, during the elections, he's conservative. I am more, I'm a leading heart liberal, according to him. So when the election happened and they started saying, well, I don't know if the election was really true. I think it might've been rigged. And what about this? And he'd bring up these things that would happen. And so then I would find an article and that disproves it and says, actually, this is what the judge said. Actually, there was no water main break, or whatever it is. And I would send it to him. And before he even opened it, he said, I'm not reading that. I'm like, why? He goes, it's the New York Times. All they do is lie. Main Street media, right? Or whatever it is. You can't trust them. They're not a viable source. Like instantly, because something went against what he already believed to be true, right? Even if the facts or whatever the article is, he instantly fight or flight. He's like, nope, I can't because it has that name. And I'm like, come on, friend. Like they have like ethics. They have a whole editorial board that has to go through. They have to verify these stories. They just can't make it up. That is goes against everything. So then, funny, right? And this is not an argument of what is the most reliable news source and are some skewed to meet some purposes. That's not the point. Because then he would send me articles and I'd look at the website it came from and what did I do? And say, I'm not reading that. No, that's some made up stuff. Why? Because it contradicts what I've already believed to be true, right? So now listen to this podcast, I'm like, I did that as well, fight or flight. I wouldn't read it, I wouldn't engage with it, I wouldn't talk about it, I wouldn't see and research, like, is it really true? Instantly, it's like, no, I don't like this. It goes against what I believe, what I agree, and since I already confirmed my bias, right? This is what we do when it comes to white nationalism or white supremacy or patriarchy. When I have these conversations, people are like, oh, no, I'm not a racist. And instantly, that fight or flight goes up. Because just let me stay in my lane. Let me keep going the direction I'm going in, right? Because it makes me feel good. I belong. So all that to say, right? When you begin to maybe have some questions about theology or view of God or some things in the Bible, things that you said or practiced or held onto or handed on to your kids, and all of a sudden you begin to question it, it should scare you, sadly. Because it's lonely. Like when we, and if you want to hear more of this story specifically at our beginnings class after I go into detail of this, but there was a time where we asked some questions and we said this is where we're at, and we had a transition into Neighborhood Church. And I could tell you that was very lonely. It was 9 months of just feeling completely numb. I did lose friends. I lost some of my best friends. I lost some other people just because I couldn't even respond. They didn't even like disagree with it. I just was numb, right? What if we could change that narrative? Like the theme for this year is that we want to have an evolving faith that continues to go on, that the real you is not a threat. If the real you has questions like everybody does, that we don't have to pretend to be something else. So we don't have to say, oh no, I get to belong because I agree with all these things. It's like the sense of belonging is already in you. The best of God is already there. And that's what I want for my kids. That's what I want for someday, hopefully my grandkids, is where spirituality and religion, whatever word you want to use, of where we can openly process and agree and disagree and still get the best of one another. We can still engage and move in love, that you can really belong. And I would say that this is, the process, if you want to read a really good book on this, by the way, I reference it often. It's called Falling Upwards by Richard Rohr. Just read the introduction. Just read the introduction and then like take an hour, cry, and then take a whole day just to think about it. Then continue to read. But what Richard Rohr calls that process is order, disorder, and reorder. And next week, I'm going through those each individually and talking about how we see it in the Bible. Because for me, that language has helped a ton. So the reason we're making this the theme, like we're gonna have a whole series on reintroducing, what is it, how can we find life in scripture again? What does it look like to be a person who prays? What does it look like to have forgiveness? All those lead to that evolving faith, leads to that transformation. And the reason that this is a theme, you may be saying, well, Chris, where's that in the Bible? Here's what I'd say to that. That is the Bible. An evolving faith is the Bible itself. So quickly, we're going to get, I've been in seminary for 3 weeks, so I think I can do this now, all right? Quickly, what is the Bible not? What the Bible is not is as important as what the Bible is. The Bible is not of Melissa Hendricks' favorite Christian band from the 90s, Burlap the Cashmere. They sing a song, the acronym of Bible is basic instructions before leaving earth. That is not what the Bible is. It's not an owner's manual, right? We can find incredible, helpful, life-giving practices and tips in there. That's not the purpose. The purpose of the Bible, people say inerrancy, that there is no errors in the Bible, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of flaws in the Bible. If you just read the Gospels, they contradict each other. In Genesis 1, there's a creation story, and then in Genesis 2, there's another one that differ from one another, right? And when people say the word inerrancy, where it came from is trying to defend of biblical criticism, of people in archaeological findings, right? Of what happened with the Canaanites maybe didn't happen the same way. And they say, no, there's no error. And any errors that you can find, right? What they'd say is, well, the problem is not in the Bible, because we have a plain reading of the Bible, and every single word that person wrote down, that's God's word. Individually, that's God's word. And so the problem is in you. And maybe we won't know the full revelation until we're in heaven. Well, that's a convenient answer, right? So the fact that the Bible might have flaws, I got to get to that, right? What the Bible isn't. It's not a scientific book, right? The way it was written, there's 66 books written over a span of 1,500, 2,000 years in different places around the world of how they viewed in that moment, of how they viewed the divine, in that space of what history looked like, or what science looked like, or what sexuality looked like, or what paganism looked like, what like pluralism looked like, right? So they're telling their space and their time this story. So what is the purpose of the Bible? Wisdom. It's wisdom. That's the purpose of the Bible. It's people, like when I read the Bible, the word that comes over and over again is saying, Chris, can you see me? Can you see that in this space, I believe the Bible to be inspired by God. Absolutely, I believe the Bible to be the authority. Absolutely, right? It's people who were inspired by this God, inspired by that cloud, inspired by that story, inspired by how God came in and brought life, right? They said, I need to share this on because this is how I view God. And you can see from throughout the Hebrew Bible into the New Testament of there is this evolution. Take this, right? 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles tell the same story, but about 300 years, roughly 300 years apart. One is pre-exile and one is post-exile, right? Then with the Babylon came back. And the first one, there's a part in there where it says that we should do this because clearly God told us to do this, right? 300 years later, they tell the same story and it says, clearly Satan told us to do this. First time they use the word Lucifer, right? Which means deceiver. First time you use it. Well, which one is it? They start by saying, oh, clearly God would want us to do this. But they saw the fruit of that decision. They saw the fruit of that idea of who God is. Of course, God would want us to do this. And later on, they saw the fruit wasn't good. What do healthy people do when they realize something that they believe to be true, that was life-giving, that they really did believe was God, and they found out the fruit led to pain, led to exclusion, or violence in thought or in deed? What do? You put it back down. You say, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I evolved. God never changed in that time. Who changed? We did. Can you see that? This happens all over. They leave prophets, the people who canonize the Bible, leave the prophets who hold up like a mirror to culture saying, you are full of yourself, friends. You are missing it. They leave the story of Jonah, right? I love the story of Jonah, of where they believed like as the Israelites, Hebrew people, we are the blessed one. And they forgot. God told Abraham, light to all the world. And God says, hey, you're going to go to Nineveh. And all these people, and Jonah's like, those are the bad guys. We don't like bad guys. We like good guys, us versus them. And what does God do? God's saying, they're included. We look at the person of Jesus. We could do this all day. Person of Jesus. You heard it said, an eye for an eye. An orthodox statement that's in the Holy Scriptures itself, right? He goes, but I say that we should love our enemies. Jesus like has like, there's higher ways of seeing. There's infinite ways of knowing my Father. There's infinite levels of knowing who the divine is. Paul was a part of a faith that would go and persecute and kill anyone of this whole Jesus movement. He has this encounter with God, and he goes on this writing tour, this writing binge, which is most in the New Testament, doing what? Saying the very people that we said are unholy, the very people we said that are a threat to us, God says, you're included. Richard Rohr puts it this way. What we do and what we see in the Bible is that we continually transcend. And when you transcend in a way of knowing God, it moves in a place of love that you can't help but include. Transcend and include. Evolve. Transformation. So this is our theme for this year is going to be how do we continue to grow? That might for you, like, yeah, of course, that's what you're supposed to do in church. But for me, there's so many people, if I have these conversations all the time, clearly there's a lot of us who feel fear. So here's for you, my friends. Those who feel a sense of shame or fear about your body. Those who feel a sense of silence about what you really think about your habits. To my friends who feel a sense of isolation in the way that they view the God and the Bible. For those who feel like you don't have a voice because of who you are and how you identify. For those of you who feel that you've just been pushed to the edges for the way that you think or because of the color of your skin. You are not alone. The real you is a threat, and we have a place. The thing I've loved, not just being a pastor, but I get to belong to this community, is I don't have to pretend to be something different because I'm a pastor. I don't have to pretend like I have to hold on to these things because that's what good pastors do. I've made mistakes. I'm going to continue to make mistakes. But I truly believe I don't have to play this Christianity game. I too want to transcend. I too want to evolve. I want to do it with you because that's what life is. And we're going to do it together. And the real you is beautiful. Questions, doubts, certainty, uncertainty, different views, different ways of practicing, conservative, bleeding heart liberal, all of it belongs, and we're all deeply connected, and God is a fan of all of it. So let me pray. Please join me. So God, we love you. And I thank you that the idea of diversity is not a threat. When we see in the Bible, it says that every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that you are Lord. That all things are connected to you. All things are made right. And all things means all things. That when our questions lead us to love, that we can continue to move forward. And then when our questions or our thoughts lead us to violence or lead us to exclusion, that leads us to keeping people separate, that we can leave that behind and continue to move and continue to grow. So I pray for my friends who feel alone. I pray for my friends who feel scared. I pray for my friends who have already started this journey and have lost maybe friends or maybe lost some sense of belonging. Be with us and give us the courage, give us the love, and give us most of all wisdom. Wisdom. We love you. Amen. All right. So we are going to wrap things up. If you want, we're going to have our belongings class. It's going to start right around 11 o'clock. Belonging class? No, beginnings class. So if you'd like to hop on the beginnings class, it lasts maybe 20, 30 minutes. But if you have questions, man, I'd love to have you. I'd love to have you join us. You can find that on our webpage at neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Or you can find our social media stuff as well. All right, friends, have a great rest of your weekends. Go Buccaneers.